If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, are the Astros still in on Bregman? Like for real? It looks like one of the Astros' potential targets is landing on another team. And is enough enough with the Dodgers? Gents, every episode this offseason has started with an Alex Bregman update. Still no news on that front as of this recording. And I really do think we were all expecting him to have signed somewhere by now. Joe Espada says they are still in contact with Bregman. They as in the Astros, I presume. This is the second time we've heard that Bregman was still in play in Houston. The other was from Reggie Jackson, and we quickly dismissed it. But what kind of swerve would it be if Houston ends up landing Bregman after all these moves we've seen from Houston this offseason?
That would be quite the swerve. I, at this point, chalk it up to the wishful thinking column. But since Bregman's market obviously has not been that of his and Scott Boras's dreams, as we discussed before, if the Astros wanted to trade Isak Paredes, I mean, they wouldn't get anything for him, but if they wanted to move the money to add to the Alex Bregman kitty, but would the Astros even still extend 6 years, $156 million, since quite obviously no one came in over the top on that? And when you factor in the tax issue in Houston, and Breggy so loved it here, I think he and the Red Sox, you know, that still seem, if the Red Sox are willing to put out more money and block one of the best infield prospects in baseball, because supposedly Devers doesn't want to move to first base, so they'd be signing Bregman to play second base. But if you're Jim Crane, would you make that same offer to Bregman now? I don't think I would offer 6 years at this point. But as always, not my money, not our money. So it's if Jim Crane's feelings weren't hurt at being rebuffed at 6 years, 156. I mean, I do generally subscribe to never say never.
I do too. I'm just kind of curious about the motivation. I understand why people keep asking the Astros, like, hey, what's the latest with Bregman? Is it still a possibility? Because, I mean, we're in the media. We want to talk about these things. They're interesting. But if you're the Astros saying you're still, is that just to make the fan base feel better? Or do they really see themselves as possibly going after Bregman after they already filled his spot? That's was so odd to me. I mean, Paredes, like Charlie mentioned, how much are you going to get for him? And he was a big piece of that Kyle Tucker trade. You're just kind of throwing away a lot of value in that move if you don't use him at third base. So I don't really understand the logic. I just, what is this, a Espada? He's tight with Bregman, so we're still in contact. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But that is the deal with Jim Crane. We've heard that when the Correa negotiations, we've heard it for years. They put down an offer, and that's the offer. But in this circumstance, yeah, would they lower the offer? And if you're Bregman, what do you do here? Would you rather return to the Astros on a longer deal or take a deal with some opt-outs that's a shorter deal with more money per year with another ball club? I don't know, but it almost looks like Boras and Bregman, did they really screw this up and not see the market? Because you would imagine if the money was the best and it was the best offer, you would think if Bregman knew that, he would have just come back to the Astros. If you know that's the most money you're going to get, you're comfortable playing here. But did they misplay this? Is this all just kind of an effort to get some higher dollar amounts from other teams? I don't know. I'd certainly love to see Bregman back. But man, Dana Brown, if you go replace Bregman and then you end up signing him for a big deal and then you move the trade piece that you brought in to replace him, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But it's one of those situations where I really miss Click as the GM of this baseball team.
Well, I do find it interesting that Dana Brown said that they pivoted away from Bregman. He's already used that term, pivoted. They pivoted because the talks had stalled. That's a choice of words that I assumed was intentional, considering they didn't think they were going to get him back. And it's too early to say whether Scott Boras has screwed Bregman this offseason. But do you think now that Breggy has seen the market and seen what it looks like, if you injected him with truth serum, do you think he'd just rather have taken that deal? That's what you said, Josh. Would you think he would just rather have taken that deal and maybe saved himself a little bit of this waiting and the optics that he's had to go through this offseason?
I have to lean yes. And clearly, they were thinking at least 7 years, at least $200 million, unless someone wanted to come, I guess, at 6 years, $200 million, but starting with a two. And that will not be happening. That said, when you get to where you are testing free agency to go through the experience, even if you're not getting the answer to the question you had that you'd hope for, would you have that? Well, I wonder if I'd gone out there. But 156 million birds in hand, I think I'd take that over, gee, could I have gotten 200 million from the bush somewhere?
I just wonder too, like, where did that $200 million come from? You guys remember we did a podcast on this a while back when Matt Chapman got that deal, the 6 years, $151 million deal. Everybody was abuzz, like, okay, well, this is maybe the ballpark of what Bregman could command. And for them to think that they would get $50 million more dollars, I don't understand the logic there. But yeah, Brandon, I think Bregman probably would, if he would have known ahead of time, just stayed with the Astros. I don't see why he wouldn't. But at this point, I think the train's left the station for the Astros. But it's interesting that Dana Brown and Espada don't seem to be on the same page. Like you mentioned, Brandon, we pivoted, but Espada saying they're still in contact and never say never. And the whole Reggie Jackson thing in this is just really peculiar.
Yeah, it wouldn't be coming back with hat in hand exactly, right? But the spin would be interesting to hear from all parties. If you re-pivoted or unpivoted and Alex Bregman wound up back here. And one other moving piece, and this isn't just Astros specific, right? The Cardinals, they come out at every turn. We're desperately trying to trade Nolan Arenado. So any team that trades for Nolan Arenado is another possible Bregman suitor off the board. And it doesn't mean that the Cardinals are opening up third base for Alex Bregman. So we wait. Maybe we wait beyond pitchers and catchers reporting. Right, it took into March, late February, early March for a couple of Boras's guys last year. Not what Bregman's paying them for. But look, I mean, what's the catastrophic outcome for Alex Bregman? He signed somewhere 1 year with an opt-out after it. And the same if he gets the Bellinger deal, you know, where you're getting 3 years at over $25 million per year. And Bregman's already finished up a $100 million contract. So we're not approaching human tragedy if it just all turns out to have gone wrong for Alex Bregman.
Charlie, to your point about birds and bushes, there's one less bush in play for Bregman that also happens to be a bird, as the case may be. But breaking news this week that the Blue Jays reportedly land Anthony Santander, 5 years, $90 million. Now that we have the final price for Santander, would you guys have rather have seen the Astros sign Santander at that current price of five at 90 or pay Bregman, Houston's reported offer at six at 156?
I'm not definitive. So if you are, Josh, maybe you can sway me.
Part of me was just the loyalty, the leadership, that you know what you have in Alex Bregman and Santander. That's why it's taken a while. People are like, can we count on him to continue to have years like he just had this past season? But based on the value and the savings that you'd get with Santander, he can hit left-handed, being a switch hitter, something you desperately need, and your outfield is a disaster right now. I think I would lead to Santander because you already plugged the Bregman hole when we got Paredes in the Kyle Tucker deal. So it just seems more logical to, well, we already have this piece here and we have a big gaping hole over here. And this guy's less expensive. He hit over 40 home runs. We've been talking about Bregman. He hits in the 20s now for as far as home runs going forward. They could use another bat. I know the defense isn't great with Santander, but maybe you can hide him in left field a little bit. So I just think with the it just makes more sense to me. It's a little risky because you don't know what Santander will be for the next few years, but he makes more sense with the makeup of the way the club's built right now.
Bregman's on base percentage fell apart in 2024. His .315 on base percentage, better than Anthony Santander's career on base percentage. You know, they're basically the same age, 30, about to turn 31. Bregman was the better player overall in 2024 by war. When you factor in defense, that would be a real money gap, though. Paying 36-year-old Alex Bregman $26 million when the decline has been evident over the last 2 years. Not that he's become a bad player, but trending the wrong way and nowhere close to superstar-level offensive output. That's 5 years in the rear view and presumably not coming back. You know, and Jim Crane shouldn't be insulted that Bregman turned down his offer, but I'm guessing Jim Crane's answer to that would be, yeah, we'd take Santander given his contract term that he got with Toronto versus what we offered and had rejected by Team Bregman.
He slugged over 500 last year, Santander. The only other guys on the Astros to do that were Tucker and Yordan. So he provides that pop. And what did we say when they lost in the playoffs? They don't have enough offense. That's a lot of pop from him. That's a nice slugging percentage right there. But you do counter it with the on-base percentage not being as good. But this team needs some thump in the lineup, especially with Tucker moving on. It's a nice what if.
But that home run number blew away his previous career high. Yeah. And he hit .235 while doing it. So if the power was over his head, and the on-base percentage stays low, and he's a bad outfielder, that could turn into a little bit Carlos Lee-ish if you're the Astros, or specifically now in reality, the Blue Jays.
It's risky.
And clearly, this isn't about the Astros being cheap. We always know that narrative is out there, but the market spoke for Bregman. Granted, he still might get a big deal, but it looks less and less likely as each day passes. Shifting gears here, the offseason has been about the asset acquisition, if not hoarding, that is happening over on the Dodgers. We had news that Japanese phenom Roki Sasaki makes the least surprising decision, signs with LA. Then the Dodgers signed closer Tanner Scott to a four-year, $72 million deal, which includes even more deferred money. That puts LA's luxury tax threshold at $375 million, which is $70 million more than the next highest team, the Phillies. Over the weekend, SpotTrack published a list of all the deferred money on active contracts between Ohtani, Betts, Snell, Freeman, Smith, Edmund, Hernandez, and now Scott. It's currently sitting at $1.375 billion. That's billion with a B. Our mutual friend Patrick Creighton retweeted that, came over the top of it and said, you know, just to put it into perspective, that $1.375 billion is more than the total value of seven MLB franchises, according to their Forbes valuation. We know that what they're doing is not against the rules, and deferring the money does not get them around the CBT. However, they are alone in how uniquely they're positioned to do these things, given the liquidity of their franchise and the unique TV rights deal, and that they're owned by investment bankers, and they can use fiduciary tools to fund their payroll and escrow that earn interest on deferred money to meet or exceed inflation. So at what point do you think the league and owners step in and say, enough is enough?
I don't see it unless the players agree to a salary cap. And the Players Association had to sign off on all this deferral stuff. And the bulk, well, maybe it's not the bulk anymore, near half at least, right? Ohtani, a unique case, $680 million of that, what did you say, $1.37 billion, give or take. So the Dodgers are playing obviously a very favorable hand, but they're not going to win the next five World Series. It's just not how baseball works. The Steinbrenner era Yankees, they won a couple in the 70s and then won three in a row, four out of five. No one's won two straight since the Yankees won those three straight, 98, 99, 2000. I mean, the Dodgers are clearly the best roster. They're clearly best positioned to go back to back. Obviously, they're the only team that could go back-to-back in 2025. But the nature of baseball, three out of five and then four out of seven, it's not like the Phillies, the Braves, the Mets, the Padres, whoever wins the NL Central, whoever gets in there is going to be capable of taking the Dodgers down. But now everyone in the sport who's not a Dodger fan is going to be rooting for exactly that because it just feels fundamentally unfair. It's like when Golden State fell into Durant because it was the summer that the cap jumped up in the NBA and Golden State was just positioned at that time. Oh, okay, we can add Kevin Durant to a championship team. But baseball works differently. A yes or no question of the Dodgers winning the 2025 World Series. You know what? Give them Aaron Judge. Give them Yordan Alvarez too. I'll take the field.
That's a big statement there. Well, the way Judge hits in the postseason, maybe not so much. But I think Charlie hit on the Steinbrenner Yankees. That's where my mind went to. Is I was like, baseball's really had no problem with teams buying championships in the past. Like, this isn't all that new. It's just how they're doing it is a little bit more new. I thought it was interesting. Ben Verlander tweeted out, you know, teams cry cheat, but they won't ever open up the books to show how much they're truly making. That's where the problem is. But we know it's much more deeper than that, that the Dodgers have advantages the other teams just don't have. I mean, it's something for people to talk about, and I hate it. I don't want to see the Dodgers getting in every single year either. But this is kind of where it is. There is that kind of coveted top elite group of baseball that they're typically in the playoffs most years. But the other thing to keep in mind, a lot of contracts don't work out. You know, sometimes you overpay for somebody and they don't perform. And you just look at Abreu here, how quickly he fell off. Sometimes these big deals are not going to work out. But with other teams besides the Dodgers, then you're kind of penalized for that deal not working out because that money's earmarked. And just like the Astros are in a spot this year where they can't really do anything because they're still playing Abreu, they're still playing Montero. I think that's the thing with the Dodgers where if they swing and miss on some of these deals, it's not going to hurt him that much, whereas other teams, it's an absolute killer.
But as long as the evil empire doesn't win every year, isn't it kind of good to have an evil empire? That common, loathsome target to take down, provided they do get taken down as often, more often than not. And the Astros are off the hook. I mean, I think it's enough in the rearview mirror that it's a non-factor at this point, pretty much anyway, other than bored fans who will shout at Altuve. But the Dodgers are now the most hated, envied, hated team in baseball.
Yeah, and going back to the deferred money, Ohtani is unique in the case that it's the most egregious. But out of those eight players that I listed that have deferred money, five of them are over $50 million in deferred money. So I'll just run down the list real quick. Ohtani at $680 million. Betts, $115 million. Snell, $66 million. Freeman, $57 million. Will Smith, $50 million. The last three are the least of them, which is Edmund at $25 million, Hernandez at $23.5 million, and Tanner Scott at $21 million. So while Ohtani's was unique, it just was the biggest of a bundle of a lot of deferred money. But again, teams have to be more conscious of the valuation of their franchise, and putting a lot of long-term debt on your books devalues that franchise over the long haul. I have a proposal to this because I don't think there's going to be anything too monumental that happens on this. My proposal would be, and I don't have all of the kinks worked out on this, but it's just kind of a fun thought experiment. What if a team that's exceeding that final threshold of the CBT no longer qualifies for a first round bye? So you can go buy your super team and win 120 games. But if you exceed that threshold, you are subject to the chaos of the wild card round, which allows for much more variance since it's only a best two out of three. So I'm outside the box here. What do you guys think of my proposal?
If the owners could just vote that through, I kind of feel like right now it'd be 29-1. I like the ingenuity of it. I myself would not be in favor of it. You know, if the Dodgers are worth more and can afford the mortgage and buy nicer drapes and carpeting and furniture for their house, unless it's collectively bargained that you can't operate that way. I mean, every fan would be delighted to have its team be able to operate that way. And while the Dodgers, in some respects, they are one of one, well, the Mets owner is worth $15 billion. The Yankees print money. The Cubs, when run well, print money. It's just the Dodgers who are most successfully doing it. But fun idea.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to see it, Brandon, because not only does it accomplish a lot of the stuff we already talked about, fans want to see these super teams, right? Like, if they have to play every round of the playoffs, that you get to see them do it more. And if you're so confident in your group of ringers that you have, you should be able to think that you can go run the table on everybody and go through a full playoff run if you're that much better than them. So I think it's a fun idea. I think part of it's on the players, though, too, right? These guys want to win. They have to be willing to defer some of this money. That's a choice that they make. And it's not exactly the same type of situation, but I think back to when Tom Brady kept redoing his deal and taking less so that the Patriots could get some more players around him. Whereas remember at that same time, Peyton Manning would get the absolute most amount of money that he could get every single season. And he would say, well, it's not up to me to figure out the rest of the team. That's on the GM and the owners to figure out how to put talent around me. But Brady was more willing to do that. And then you look back at who had a significantly more success in championships. It was Tom Brady who said, you know, and look how much money Brady's making now and media and all other kinds of stuff. So is Peyton, too. So that's part of it. Players that really want to win a championship, sometimes they'll defer money or even take less. And that's part of it, too, because if none of these guys were willing to defer their money, then we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, we have to look at is it's not just about, because these are all billionaires that own. You have to be a billionaire to own a team. So it's not just about haves and have nots, because we're talking about a group of owners that are all haves. We're talking about from relative to competitive balance within the league. The difference between a team like the Mets and Dodgers is the Dodgers are set up in a situation where they have this legacy of winning. They've got this great roster that's already assembled. So they can go get a guy like Roki Sasaki, who left his own devices. He's going to be like, oh, well, yeah, well, they win. I can go be on a contender right now. And I'm going to play with some other guys who are also Japanese that are there. So there's some familiar. I'm not like on an island like I would be at a lot of teams. And so that is kind of a difference, because the Dodgers have proved it. The Mets haven't. So while the Mets can write a check and are just as capable of it, it's also about the legacy. And so Dodgers have that in spades. Shift gears again. The timing of this next story is a little bit dicey because Hall of Fame announcements are not official as of this recording. But as it stands, all indications are that the Astros will have their third player inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame. Closer Billy Wagner is on track. Charlie, Josh, what are your thoughts on the enshrinement and legacy of Billy the Kid?
Clearly worthy and going to get in, or has gotten in fairly comfortably in his 10th and final year of eligibility, so they made him sweat it out. Interesting, and again, before the final numbers are in, but with about half the ballots accounted for, he won't go in as an Astro, but Wagner will be joined on the dais by Carlos Beltran, who in his third year of eligibility, the big spinoff of that, any concern, oh, are they going to hold the cheating against Jose Altuve? Resounding no. Right. Beltran was kind of, along with Alex Cora, the generally acknowledged co-leads in the scheme, right? Altuve didn't want much to do with it. Beltran's going into the Hall of Fame. Altuve's now a no-brainer, very, very easy one. But Wagner, remarkable career. Astros Media Relations put together a dossier that really shouldn't have been necessary, but laid it out very well. There are seven preceding Wagner who made their Hall of Fame bones largely as relief pitchers. Dennis Eckersley actually had a body of work as a starter, but he's in the Hall of Fame because of what he did as a closer. And in a number of key stats, earned run average, opposing batting average, whip, strikeouts per nine innings, seven or eight categories. Billy Wagner's behind only Mariano Rivera in several of them. And while he pitched pretty much as only a one-inning guy, about 900 innings pitched, a very low number, even for a Hall of Fame of relief pitcher, I mean, a 2.31 career earned run average. It's just ridiculous, including pitching the front half of his career in the peak steroid era, a 2.31 ERA. and had the second best season of his career when he was 39 years old with the Atlanta Braves. He could have kept pitching. He was fantastic with the Braves, but just decided, no, I want to raise my future big leaguer son. Didn't quite know that at the time, but just decided he'd had enough. And Billy Wagner, if you're listening or watching us, you're probably familiar. But if not, the fact that Billy Wagner was a natural right-hander and broke his arm falling out of a tree as a kid, I guess I'll have to throw lefty, and goes on to have the career that he did, a little guy, but tree trunk legs. And high praise, not that this puts you in the Hall of Fame, but always, always an accountable guy. Dim Bulbs would say, well, his career area in the postseason was over 10. Yes, it was. 11 innings of work, as if that should be a disqualifier for the Hall of Fame versus the entire body of work. But Billy Wagner would always face the music after the occasional blown save. The Astros once had a real promising young hitting catching prospect by the name of Mitch Molusky. And after a bad game, he went to hide in the trainer's room. Young, upset, pouty. And Craig Biggio and Billy Wagner, as the story goes, they were the two lead guys. That's not the Astro way. We are professionals here. You want everything that comes with the good. You face the music. You deal with the bad. You be a professional. And that was just one Billy Wagner moment that sticks out. And then just a separate thing. I know I'm prattling on, Josh. The ball is yours next. But obviously, I saw Billy Wagner a lot more. Perk of being older. With closers, the nature of the beast, they go in and they do the job. It's typically not that memorable. If I ask an Astros fan, name your three favorite Billy Wagner saves, I bet you it's a struggle. But if you think of a failure in a postseason, I mean, if you go to Yankee fans, Mariano Rivera, 600 and some odd, no question, the greatest closer of all time. Name the three greatest Mariano Rivera saves. I bet you they have to think about it. But in a heartbeat, they could say, oh, yeah, he blew game 7 of the World Series against the Diamondbacks. Yeah. So you're working without a net in that closer's role until Wagner, the couple of blowups in the postseason. He once against the Pirates with two out and nobody on in the ninth inning with an 8-2 lead. Blow it! So that just always sticks out for me because it was such a glaring exception. But Billy Wagner's body of work, good for him. Billy the Kid joining Bagwell and Biggio as quote-unquote Astros Hall of Famers because there's no decision to be made. It's an Astros cap. It was the bulk of his career. Forget Mets, Phillies, Red Sox, Braves.
With Billy, it was just fun because of his traits, right? Guy throwing like 100 miles an hour, just straight gas. He had a breaking ball, but it didn't have to be that good. It was more about just being so much more off speed from that fastball. And for him to live off that pitch and have so much success for so long. And it was kind of fun then too, because that's when closers kind of became exciting and fun and sexy, you know, with the major league movie, Ricky Wildthing Vaughn. And everybody was excited about the guys that could come in the ninth inning and throw 100 miles an hour and close out a game. So there was just so much mystique with that back then. But, you know, also, too, Charlie mentioned his ERA. His career whip was under 1. I mean, these are some pretty amazing numbers from Billy, all the strikeouts. And that was a really fun era of Astros baseball when they had that incredible bullpen. They were exciting to watch. And, you know, we're speaking a little ahead here, but, you know, congrats, Billy.
Billy was out of the game by the time I made my way into sports media, but I did get to meet him several times at Astros events. And obviously don't know him personally, but at everything I've ever, any situation where I had ever had the opportunity to interact with him, literally one of the nicest, most humble guys you'd ever like talk to, a guy who was generally, in my experience, very soft-spoken versus the flamethrower that he was on the mound. And when I was younger watching baseball, my favorite closers were Wagner and Trevor Hoffman. Now, I rooted against Rivera because he pitched on the Yankees. Thinking back on it, it's fitting that Wagner gets the Hall of Fame nod, because when you think about those 90s and 2000s Astros teams, I mean, you think about Bagwell, Biggio, and Wagner's one of the ones that comes right to mind as well. Congrats on the enshrinement, Billy the Kid. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to do us a favor and click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on places like Apple or Spotify, you would be doing us a solid by giving us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I hope hope you'll join us next Monday for our continued off-season coverage. But you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans. We'll have more content during the week and anytime news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.